This podcast is part of the Shareable Podcast Network. Learn more at shareable.fm. You are now listening to the Heroic Council.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Heroic Council. Today I'm with Parshel Tashi, and we're going to be talking about the future of creative work. So I just want to get started here. Parshel, I wanted to get started kind of like actually talking a little bit about like the last 10 years of creative work. Like just in our lifetime, we've seen a lot of transition. Like the most notable one was the transition from analog to digital. Because like, you know, we both grew up with like cassette tapes were still there and a lot of people were still using vinyl. And then, you know, there was the transition from digital to CD and then eventually MP3s. Then there was the iPod. And then this happened with photography. We saw, like, when I was in college, there was still a lot of analog photography going on. And then, like, shortly after that, everybody transitioned over to digital. Digital video, I think, was just becoming, like, was just taking over also when I was going to film school. And this is, like, impacted pretty much every creative medium. Pretty much every medium out there, a career out there. And in some ways it's been super great because it's democratized like creative work. And so like everybody's a photographer now and everybody's mm-hmm. a videographer now. Mm-hmm. In other ways, it's really been like somewhat destructive to a lot of people who had careers in these fields and did things for a certain way for so long. And then it also just like kind of created a lot of new careers that were probably inaccessible a little bit before then. So I kind of wanted to start there. And just being like, what has like the last 10 years been like for you, as you were like, this has been the prime of you like developing what you were going to do for, you know, the foreseeable future. Did everything, like for me, it was a very anxiety inducing period when everything was transitioning so quickly. What was your experience like?
Yeah, I think that by the time that I was really starting to get into my creative career, that one of the things that I think one of my mentors or advisors at the time was using was like Final Cut 7 mm-hmm. to edit. And I think by then, like Final Cut 10 had come out. And I remember just the response from that alone, being, you know, just starting to get into the career, how much of an impact that had on him just personally, you know, and for a lot of editors that were just like really, really upset with.
Yeah, I remember it wasn't very positive. Yeah.
It was not received very well, you know, by those guys. But eventually for me, I guess at the time that I did start to get into it, it was like I was just ready to embrace the new and whatever, you know, seemed to make my workflow and creative process easier. And so I gravitated towards it. I really appreciated, but I think, you know, one of the biggest things that I've seen over time for sure is just the access to creative labor now, you know, and for that reason, how much more cheaply you can get it or how much more easily people are just like, yeah, I can just edit it myself. You just film it and I'll edit it. Yeah. I mean, it's just like all these other ways of going about how to get creative work done, you know, the process changed because there was a little bit more involvement from the client side or, you know, just from people just having more of an independence towards it. But in some respect, it's kind of like, you know, it's good and bad, right? It has its pros and cons to how things have changed over the last 10 years, but I remember the older technology, you know, like the older camcorders and like you said, tape and all that kind of stuff. And I honestly think from time to time, I wish I had I could just go and do a project with an older camcorder because I always had this belief that you can hand anything to me. Like I'm gonna still tell a good story. So storytelling is still paramount. Regardless of these changes over the last 10 years, I still feel like storytelling is still an art at the, you know, at the base of it all. So if that's going strong, then the tools and how things come together, you know, should still hopefully support that notion of storytelling being the most important thing.
Yeah. Like if anything, it's really made, like creating like solid production value a lot cheaper, like for us in general. Cause like,
yeah.
The standard digital camera today is like gives you a lot of the same tools that cinema cameras back in like 2000 had, you know? Like,
I'm telling you.
And the packaging is like in this big, you know what I mean? For all of these cameras.
Super small. I mean, that is so true. I remember doing some projects where it was like we had to pack a whole, you know, U-Haul practically to go do a shoot
because
the cases were huge and they were much bigger cameras. And like now, you know, if I'm going to go do a shoot, even for myself, you know, or for someone else, it's just such a smaller setup. You really don't need as much because it is compacted in there.
And it's
changed a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And sometimes I have like, for instance, I was at a shoot on Friday and it was like, it was on a mountain in like Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't anything crazy, but like I ended up doing the whole thing handheld because like I'm climbing, you know, climbing this, like, I'm not like, you know, climbing it like this. I'm like, you know, it's all like hiking trails and stuff like that. But like, it didn't really make sense for me to bring like a ton of gear for that. Like I brought a drone and then I brought a handheld camera and then a few lenses.
Okay.
And it almost sometimes I like feel weird because I'm like, oh, they're paying me a decent amount of money to do the shoot. And I'm just kind of like lugging up like a handheld camera up here with me and this like $1,000 drone that I got in my backpack. And it feels weird, but
it does. It really does. I feel like sometimes I in some cases when that shift changes, you know, I remember at some points like actually feeling the need to explain to the client or say, you know, these cameras are really, they're powerful these days, you know.
Because
I showed up with something like this big, you know.
Yeah.
But I've had a client remark also. He was like, he's like, dang, is I didn't when he saw the final, you know, video and how it all came together, he says, you got all that on just your little like.
Yeah, I've gotten that before too.
You don't really need a whole lot, you know. Like, it's changed. So, it really has.
I remember when Instagram just took off, and at the time, my goal in life was like I wanted to be a photographer. Like I wanted to do photojournalism in particular, and I was doing like a lot of wedding photography back then. And something about Instagram at the time like felt really threatening to me because like I feel like there were some stuff around like Flickr and stuff like that back then.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, you know what I mean? Like when you produce a photo, you know what I mean? A lot of times like the photo would go into like a magazine or a newspaper, or it would just be like, you know, a company like needed this photo for their like promotion or whatever. And now a photo, I feel like, is intrinsically, not necessarily in a bad way, each individual photo is worth infinitely less than it was back before like Instagram and all these digital things came up. Because like now, like, you know, you come across a photo on Instagram and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then you keep swiping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that photo is lost to the ether. And then so now it's more about like, I guess, the I don't know what you call that, like the body of work that will continue to come eternally for the next whatever. And that's what your work is now. It's not like this one thing that you put off. And it also kind of, and tell me, I don't know, because I know you do something a little bit different than I do, but like, I feel like the value that we bring to clients is like, we'll consistently make good work for you. And you can rely on us as a partner to help you fill these feeds that you need to like feed constantly.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, for some people, you know, and clients, it's like the fact that things like Canva or, you know, Fiverr and these things exist, it almost even more so strengthens, you know, professionals in this space to stand out more. And to push us to bring more to the table, not just, you know, the ability to pick up a camera, record and edit and do whatever you say. It's like, there's a lot more that, you know, a lot more value that we can bring to this. And I think, you know, I'm a, Chris Doe is one of my mentors with the future. And, you know, he always talks about, he always talks about like, you know, essentially becoming that expert, you know, having a niche, having something that you, you know, are very specific in what you're doing. And then, you know, making bring, you know, putting yourself to a point of value to solve business problems, right? Creatives solving business problems. And when you start talking about a business problem versus, you know, just this piece of this asset that needs to be created, your value goes up 10x because now you're addressing a specific need or problem in the business. And with that, it just requires creatives now to have more of a business mindset or a way of understanding how business works in some degrees. And Chris is a big proponent of that. And that's like been a huge differentiator for him, you know, as an educator and a agency owner.
It's funny you mention that because I have like a post-it on my desktop because I was listening to a video. He was talking to a brand strategist. I can't remember who. And this guy like was doing brand work back in like the 1960s and 70s, and he like helped do a lot of stuff to define the field. And he said this one thing, what was it? Whatever design skills you have becomes weaponized when you understand brand. And I feel like that speaks to like the like being able to understand the business conversation that's going on and being able to understand their problems.
Yeah.
And you said something specifically when you brought up Canva. And I'm interested what you think about Canva, because I had been doing all my design work, and like if I was building a deck, I'd build it in InDesign or Illustrator or something like that. And then like Canva felt like it came up, like snuck up behind me. And then before I knew it, everybody was using Canva. And so when you said that like tools like that give designers potentially a lot of value to offer. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that if you're in a conversation with a client or a prospect and they're like, well, I can get it, you know, can I get this done cheaper? Why do I need to give you $1,000 to do that? It's like, you know what, you know, you can definitely go to Fiverr. You know, I've heard Fiverr might have some people on there, or you can check out, you know, Canva. It's like you can give them the opt out, if you will. And sometimes when you do that in that negotiation stage or just talking about the money, it makes you as a creative feel more confident in what you're bringing to the table. You know, you're basically saying, hey, if you want to spend $5 on this, if it matters to you, you know, if this is not a big business problem to be solved, then yeah, I highly recommend check out Fiverr, check out Upwork, check out these places. It still allows you to, as a creative, to be an advisory consultant, to direct them in a way that they feel like they need to go. But most of them don't want to go that way. They know about Fiverr, they know about Canva. Yeah, they could do it themselves, but they're on the phone with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So has the, what would be the best way to put it? Has like the kind of climate where like technology seems to be like accelerating, and like, for instance, every new iteration of Premiere or After Effects, like it seems like the AI is getting better at taking over your manual labor in those soft pieces of software. Mm-hmm. Has like the anticipation of what might come next led you to be more like considerate of the business conversation versus the like design conversation?
Yeah, it did for sure. Because it keeps changing, you know, it keeps changing. But at the end of the day, you know, if all I had was old, you know, old school iMovie or, you know, I still feel like I could tell a really compelling story. You can give me any set of tools, something to shoot with, something to have clear audio and a way to piece it together. Give me any, like, that would be a fun challenge, right? To me, it's like, what can you create with what you know, right? About business, about what, you know, the psychology of people, marketing, all that, all those other skills come into play. And design, though it is important, you know, it kind of just becomes what you're able to do with what you have, you know? And I think that the technology and how it changes, like it doesn't concern me as much for that reason, you know, because I know that I know how to solve business problems. I'm not just here to make a design, because at this point, Canva can make a design for you. Like, you know, all these tools can make those designs for you. It's true. But when you're talking about the mindset, the knowledge and experience that goes into solving business problems, it's different.
Is there anything that you might tell, like, if somebody's like looking to get into a like design field, like graphic design or video production or photography or web design or something like that? Is there anything you tell them to consider very early on while they're in like really developing their skills that like you may not have like jumped into right away because maybe you were focused on like creating the aesthetics and working to develop, like working with this complicated software and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I would, a couple of things I would say is to, you know, as you're learning your skill set, also learn how business works, you know, just from the basics. So that way you can come to the table with any client with really good questions. Sometimes just by coming to the table with really good questions, like, will have you to stand out more than any other creative they might be considering for that project or for that relationship. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Another thing too, I would say is to, you know, if you can start to think about a particular niche, somewhere to focus, you know, and that being a combination of something that you enjoy doing, right? And that there's a need there for it. I've been a part of too many, I can't tell you how many industries, and trying to niche all the time just to find what worked for me, you know, or to find that balance, you know, something that works for me and works for them in terms of it being fun and not something that, like, you know, you're just doing it because at some point you're going to get tired of it, you know? So just to make an effort to follow the breadcrumbs of the things that you enjoy, you know, and allowing that to sort of guide how your career unfolds. Again, referencing Chris Doe, sometimes when we introduce ourselves, it's not just, hey, I'm so-and-so and I do graphic design, or hey, I'm so-and-so and I do video. He's like, you know, who do you specifically help and what do you want to be remembered for? Like, what kind of work do you want to do that will mean something, you know? And it just goes to a deeper place of your own passions and the things that interest you to help this career, this path that you're on, to be something that you know, you do care about and you enjoy, and to know that you can have both.
So before you mentioned that you generally your background allows you to have like good questions when you go into a client conversation. Mm-hmm. What kind of questions would you be ready to ask if you were going to meet with a new client who had a new problem?
Yeah. So I kind of follow a couple different formats. One is to understand what their needs are, like, or actually to ask them like things about their business. So if they say, yeah, we're, you know, looking to, because this just happened the other day, we're looking to get a new video on our website. Oh, great. What's going on with your website? You know, why is this important to you right now?
Yeah.
You know, at what time does this need to be in place? Right. What are the results of this? You know, what's happening? Like, you just kind of get curious, like, why is this person asking me for this? You know, what's in it for them on the back end of this working out and this being something that helps them? So you just kind of get curious about those kinds of questions to understand how this video helps their business. And to get specific, sometimes I start asking numbers too, like, well, how many people are going to your website right now? And this is what I mean by those business and marketing, you know, things that you also, it would benefit you to be aware of, you know, and to ask questions about specific to their need, you know. Oh, we're trying to get so-and-so, you know, response from this ad. Okay, have you done ads before? How did that work out for you? What do you wish was better? You know, like, just get really curious and just ask some questions and, you know, repeat back what you hear. Sometimes that alone is such a huge validation of rapport builder, because they actually feel like they're being heard and they don't want to repeat all this juicy information to another person. They've already spent however much time going into the depths of their business problems, you know, and why they're reaching out to you. Someone else just wanted to know, okay, what colors, you know, how long is the video? You know, it's just a different conversation. You have to go that route.
Yeah, no, I've found the same thing. Generally, my clients, I notice like they are more likely to feel confident in what you're going to produce from them throughout the process if they understand what they're actually trying to accomplish. I don't know how normal that is for creatives at the moment. I feel like within the next 3 years, it's going to be like standard practice is like really like deeply understanding their goals and what their business is doing and stuff like that. I'm not sure if like right now that's like what creatives are doing in general. And I would definitely consider that, like, I don't know. I at the moment anyways, I consider that a differentiator. You know what I mean? Like when I'm talking to them, like, you know, I'm going to understand your goals. And when we make it, when we make a creative choice, it's going to always like connect back to those strategic goals that you guys have.
Exactly.
And the nuances of your business. So going back to the conversation just about like the future of creative work and the fact that you're kind of like entering into this, where you've you've definitely embraced like your like considering their market, their brand, like all their all those goals, as well as like what the design's going to be, and that you're letting all those things impact it. Do you ever feel like you've become a little bit more distant from the creative work that you wanted to do to begin with, now that you're focused on a lot of these other areas?
In some ways, I suppose. But I still feel like it is creative for me. And with that in mind, I get to also, you know, the creative process involves so many different things, and I get to focus even more on the things that I want in the creative process, you know, the things that I'm best at. And right now with you know, with how we structure our services and stuff, like I'm essentially handling a lot of the course planning, you know, the lesson planning and creating like how that's going to look.
Yeah.
Then handing it over to my business partner, who then takes it and fulfills production.
Really?
So, yeah. So now, instead of me being super wrapped up in a lot of the production, like I can really be creative and put all of that energy in how it's all structured, you know, how it's going to feel, how everything's going to flow, and then hand that off. And I think, you know, it's still much creative, but it's, you know, it is taking a step back from being involved in the nuances like that. But to me, as the creative, I feel more creative in that
but
space.
Also,
and I'll still be on site for production and stuff, but it's like, I'm not like doing all of it.
So does that mean like, as far as like all the camera work, post-production, like you generally step back, like you help them design what it's going to look like, then you have somebody like execute that, and then you're like, you know, I'm done from here.
Yeah. Except for, you know, any other quick touch points or something like that as needed. But for the most part, no. I mean, production at that point is good. You know, I have my film date, you know, when I need to be there. But, you know, ideally the way that we're setting up it would flow that way. Cause that's my business partner, wants to do the production. She wants to oversee and have all of those details. Cause really this is more of a detail oriented, you know, type of work, if you will. And
then collaborating
with the creatives in that respect. So, but they're all following essentially what me and the client have built out.
Yeah. Huh. Just for reference for the audience who may not be super familiar with like what your business is, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So the name of our business or our company is 36,000 Feet, and our signature offer is called The Author's Leverage. And with that, we help authors leverage their books by creating their online courses for them. And so that allows the authors to take their book. They sell for maybe $20 on Amazon. You know, you take out all the fees and stuff like that. You know, you can look and see, okay, if an author sells, which on average an author will sell about 50 copies a year. What I'm offering is the ability to put another zero on that price point and really scale the infrastructure and the expertise that's already very clearly laid out and selling very well, and give them a leveraged, you know, way to do more with that book and with other books or with future books. So yeah, that's what we do.
Oof. If anybody's wondering what like a super niche, like clear value proposition looks like, it's right there.
That was hard.
Okay, cool. Well, not cool that it was hard, but that's interesting. I'd like to dig into that more at some point. But like, so how long has 3,600 feet been going on for?
36,000 feet is,
sorry,
we're almost coming up on a year. Yeah, we're just a year old.
A year old. And considering you're near, now that you've now that you've launched, and you have a super niche area that you're working in. Have you found, because I hear Chris Doe talk about like the importance of niching, especially as you grow as a creative, like have you been able to enjoy some of the benefits that supposedly come with niching, and specifically like being able to like reach out to hyper targeted clients and being able to charge more because you have a specific expertise in that very, very niche area? What has your experience been so far?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of networking. Yeah. And, you know, in these networking opportunities, you know, you over time, you know, when I would say something or mention what I do, it was just like, okay, cool. Like, that sounds cool. Like, if I think of anybody, I'll let you know. Right. Kind of a thing, and how we would help each other. But with just in what I just stated, what we do and how we help people, it's like right away, oh, I know exactly who I need to connect you with. Oh, I know an author. It's just for some reason, like you can go right to exactly what it is that you're talking about with just more clarity. And for that reason, it has really, it has impacted. I can see the difference. I mean, when people reach out to me now, they're not talking about video per se or anything about my video experience. It's like, hey, I hear that you work with authors, or, you know, like they'll check out my stuff and then come to me without, it's just very interesting, you know, how people are coming there, because you've essentially, you know, made this dent and said, yep, this is what I'm doing. This is very, very specific. And for that reason, it's just easier for people to refer me. It's easy for me to also to do the marketing side of things now. It's like, I'm not just trying to just cast this wide net of all kinds of people. It's like, I now know who and where to go. And like, just think of like, if you wanted to get in front of more authors, what would you do? Like, okay, go talk to publishers, go talk to book writing coaches, editors, ghostwriters. It's like,
you don't have to like guess whether like, oh, maybe this guy needs some video stuff. It's like, oh, this guy's
not even thinking about that.
Now, like, are your clients already? Are they generally like, already in the headspace where like, oh, I'm looking to build a course or some like auxiliary material to my book, or are you like sometimes bringing this to them and are like, oh, that's an interesting idea?
For a couple authors that I spoke to in the last couple of weeks, it was kind of like, I didn't think that's okay. Like, I didn't know that I could do that, you know, that was possible. But most of them, you know, are also speakers or also in some way, shape or form, you know, creating content or things of that nature. And they have thought about making a course. So some of them are in the frame of mind to do it. And some of them are not. Some of them also, you know, as soon as I mentioned like, hey, do you have a book that, you know, you want to do more with, you know, they can easily reference. Yeah. All these 5 books over here that haven't been selling, or, you know, these keynote or some of them already have like somewhat of a miniature course already built out, or multiple trainings, and don't even realize that they could really be repackaged and whatnot. And you already have your course already sitting there, you know, you just have to get the team behind doing it. So I find a lot of different mindsets and different arenas that people are coming to the table with. People are already starting to send me books. Like, they're sending me their, they're like, can you check out the book? I'm like, yeah, so here's a link to get started. I'm not gonna start like, you know, processing this without, you know, some commitment or whatever. But yeah, it's interesting. It really changes the dynamic to be that specific.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's really cool. So and not only that, but I like back to the conversation about like the future of creative work, like as I imagine as like platforms, the technology and the mediums change, you know what I mean? Like, let's say hypothetically in 10 years, we're all using like AR glasses or something like that. This doesn't seem like an idea that would really like change your execution. You mean like yours, you could still build courses, but you know, maybe you're, you know, using this AR video recorder and then it projects stuff on the, I don't know, but it just seems like something that's a little bit more immune to like the just rapid changes in platforms. And it's not at all reliant on the fact that you have to do all this manual labor that might be taken over by something, some other piece of software at some point someday.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not too concerned about it. If anything, you know, as creatives, we just got to be aware of it, you know, and
yeah,
and in most other industries, trying to determine what is our value alongside AI and alongside technology that can take over some decisions, you know, with creative work and stuff like that, and, you know, build stuff out for you. You know, I saw someone had made a post one day that says, wouldn't it be great if there was some software that could, like, you know, you give it your assets or whatever, and then it automatically creates your ads, your videos, your landing page, your, like, just like it completely laid out exactly what a whole marketing agency or creative agency would do. And I thought to myself, like, somebody's probably already trying to think about how to do something like that using technology.
Or at least the components of it that will probably
tie
together one day. Yeah.
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 But it's like, even with that in mind, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, businesses are going to want to find customers. It's always going to be the way that they stay in business, is to find more customers. So if we are, you know, aware and on the forefront of how that happens, you know, and we're aware of it, and, you know, being creative in the space as well, it'll make a difference. I think a huge difference, and help us to stand out as creatives and not have to worry about the future of technology and where things go. It can be something that we can, you know, still figure out how we fit in it, you know, and lead it, you know, still, because we're human. So,
yeah. Or at the very least, like, comfortably be along for the ride.
Yes. Yeah.
As far as, are you really like a mentor, Christo?
Yeah, I'm one of his mentees or whatever.
Oh, that's awesome. Sorry. I
yeah, he's.
I'm a big fan of From the Future. I like.
Are you part of content. The? You part of the group?
I've been considered. Wait, is it which
the pro group? The group?
I don't. I
okay,
yeah, no, I,
okay.
Not yet. Yeah, it's something okay. I've been considering. I joined a couple other groups recently, but that's okay. Like my. I told my wife, I was like, once I'm making this much, I'm going to join this group. And
yeah, Chris, he's one of the people, you know, and what I'm sharing about what I'm doing with authors, like he helped with sort of helping me to see that and gave me some feedback on our packages and offerings and stuff like that. And he's going to be a guest on my podcast that I'm doing starting, called The Author's Leverage. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, he agreed to be on that. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Yeah,
yeah, I'm pumped for that, because he wrote a book too, you know, and he's done a lot with courses recently.
When that podcast comes out, you'll have to send it to me. That would be really exciting. How many episodes is your podcast into right now?
It hasn't launched yet, so
we're
still getting, but he would be episode number 8.
Cool. We should do an episode about your podcast when your podcast launches.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be super cool. Cool. So, what is, just to like kind of cap up now, what is one thing that you're like super into right now? Is there anything you just suddenly become obsessed with recently?
Okay. Well, you guys know I'm into like meditation and stuff. So, I recently came across more information about transcendental meditation.
Okay.
And I've just been, you know, been into that and just curious about learning more about that. And so far, just from what I've learned and been understanding, it's been really helpful. Been really helpful.
Can you give me like a brief?
I was like, probably should say more.
Yeah, so, I looked it up and then I was like, oh, this looks like I need to explain this to me.
So there's all different types of meditation, right? Meditation is great because it's a way of sort of quieting the mind to understand the other ways of life and intelligence beyond the surface, right? When we consider the surface, right? When you start to go beneath the surface, it's you just get deeper and deeper into I guess, you know, you just in your mind being quieted to have access to these higher levels of intelligence, right? When we look outside and you see the plants and you see trees growing, they're not straining to grow. They're not like striving to be a good tree. They're just a good tree. You know, it's yeah. something that naturally comes, and it's because they're, you know, it's a different type of intelligence that's more simple. And the yeah. more simple you get, the more effortless and beautiful things are. And so that's sort of what transcendental meditation, it leads you to. It's a way of turning your mind, instead of being focused on the surface things and what's on the outside. It's a really interesting way of like turning the mind to focus within yourself. And in doing that, you know, as you start to just kind of become more and more effortless in a sense, right? You know, your mind still might be going and all that, but it's just a way of just being at ease. And and it's eventually getting to this place where, you know, there is, you know, a sense of effortlessness. And as you spend time in that space, when you spend time not so much on the surface and in the external world, you really start to easily, it's like going to a gas pump, and you kind of fill up on these things from that intelligence that really don't need any explanation. It's just what it is. It's powerful. It's beautiful. And those things, it's kind of like you keep it with you. And then when you come back to the surface world, in your real world, in your real life self, you know, your consciousness grows, and a lot of negativity starts to kind of just fall off a little bit, bit by bit. Mm. Tension, stress, things like that, because from that deeper place within all of us is love, is pure, is purity. It's no fear. You know, there's nowhere to be. There's nothing you have to be. You're good enough. Like, all of those things are just, you know, it just is. And anyway, it just kind of carries over. Somehow it stays with you and it can come with you when you come back into your, you know, your egoic self, or who you think you are. And yeah, it's like your tank is kind of full, and you can, other negative things in your life just start to kind of fall away in a sense, because, you know, fear and love can't be in the same place. Light and darkness can't be in the same place, and light always wins over the darkness, kind of a thing. So you get more of the good at the gas tank, and then, you know, a lot of the negative things will fall off.
Getting the premium.
Yeah.
So
that's a good way of saying it. It's like transcendental meditation is like premium premium gas.
All right, one last question about that. So as far as like the other forms of meditation that you've done in the past, have you noticed like a big difference between this? And also, in a part B to that question, is should you start with something else if you like before jumping into transcendental meditation, or is it something that's like accessible to everyone?
Yeah, there's all different types of meditation. It's really just levels of how engaged your mind is.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can go into a meditation where your mind is, you know, your eyes are closed, so you're already kind of pointing your mind inward. And in doing that, you can engage the mind. You can start to visualize things, think, you know, get creative and all that kind of stuff. But all different types of meditation, it's just a different level of engagement with your mind, you know, and things that you're thinking about. But with transcendental meditation, it's like your mind, you just let it go. You don't even worry about it. It's kind of like right now your heart is beating, your lungs are doing its thing, and you don't have any focused attention on those things, but they're still going and all that, right? And you are not your heart, you are not your lungs, you are not any of those things. Our mind is like an organism within itself, or, you know, it's like a like an organ, you know, it's like a psychological organ.
Yeah.
And so in that place of just being at ease and sort of being effortless, the mind can do its thing just like your heart is going to do its thing. You know, your lungs are going to do its thing, but you don't have to give it that level of focus. And eventually, it's like the way that it kind of starts to feel, I would say the difference is like if you're driving your car and you're in traffic, you know, your mind, your thoughts are like, oh, I'm in traffic, you know, oh, traffic, you know. But like, let's say that you're on the 32nd floor of a building and you looked over and you saw traffic kind of coming down the road, you would be like, traffic. That's, you know, traffic.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pick up
still observing the same thing, right? You're still, you still are witnessing traffic, but from a different perspective to where you're not attached to it. Because that's where we all get hung up. It's like we're super attached to this outside world and completely sleep to the fact that there is another, you know, world within us that is inside of all of us that is the same. And it just, it meditate, you know, to me, it just kind of gets more deep in that place. And that's something that I always like, always been super interested in at the end of the day. Like, it's one of my biggest values is like spirituality and going within, because I feel like that's always the ultimate answer to anything that you're experiencing or going through. It's like, the ultimate math problem. That's the answer.
I was gonna say like because I got, you know, as you asked me before we started, like I got married a couple weeks ago, and I like once I like came, like we didn't really like have a honeymoon or anything. Like we went away for just like a couple days, and then Christina had to go back to work, and we were planning on going to like Korea like sometime in 2022, and when I got back, just between like all the stress and all the stuff that was going on between work and the wedding simultaneously and just like jumping back into work, when I got back, I just felt like I and I still feel this way to some extent because I wasn't sleeping that great either because of all the anxiety that I had around it. I just like as you're describing it, I don't know, like my brain was a mess and I was like, I gotta do some work on this to kind of like reset because.
Yeah, I know. I could talk about it forever. You know, it's like your mind presents a thought, and then it's like you just like you grab a hold to this thought and allow, and you can, and it takes you so deep into it. You're like,
yeah. And then like emotion gets tied to the thought. And then now like you had this thought, which evoked this emotion. And now you're in a mood, and now you're associating other thoughts to this emotion,
and now you're like, making decisions based on that emotion. It's crazy. Yo, so like
it's just a catastrophic failure
until like until you catch yourself. That's the thing. It's like it used to take me like a week to catch myself, right? Now through this process of seeing the mind as something that's just an organ, right? That just needs health. It needs to be taken care of. You know what I mean? Like, to perform better, so that way I can use it when I need it, because it still is powerful. It's like creating that separation is huge. Like, you are not your mind, and the more you do that, it's like that reaction time. It just gets shorter and shorter and shorter. So it's instead of going 3 hours down the rabbit hole of this thought that you don't want to have, you know.
Yeah.
How can we catch ourselves in a quicker time to wake up? You know what I mean? Yeah. To come back to, you know what? That's not true. That's, you know, I can make a different decision and not even consider that thought or trip over it.
Because I used to be like way more like it definitely is like exercise, because I used to be way more consistent about meditation when I was younger. And I still like, I don't meditate super consistently at all anymore. But I still like see the benefits that I gained when I was doing it consistently, because like I will notice when I'm in a certain headspace and I can kind of like do something to kind of like get myself like center myself or bring myself back to reality to some extent, or at the very least like just realize the headspace that I'm in and I shouldn't be making any strong decisions right now.
Yes, right. Like, this
headspace that reflects reality. Yeah, and but at the same time, like you notice like when you. Over the years of like, oh, like my ability to do that is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And it's something that like, I think I feel like in the same way we teach gym class or music class in school,
yes.
Like there should be like meditation, you know, should be like a
course. Yes.
I bet and it would be something.
And I think it's and we talk about the future of creativity.
Yeah.
This is such a staple part in it. Because as we create more, we're going to be creating more things to see, more things to experience.
Oh,
and, you know what I mean? And right now, if you go on social media and you just spend 5 minutes there, you know, it can be hard sometimes, you know, next thing you know, you get a thought and you're like, shit, I suck at life and like you're down a rabbit hole. So I just think that, you know, that balance, like we all, you know, I think should incorporate more ways of separating ourselves from, you know, the trick of the mind and how easily it can make us think that we are that or we're not enough or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I think that the future.
Literally right before this podcast, I'm putting together a proposal right now, and mm-hmm. I had to go through, like, because they're looking for, like, some very specific things. So I was, like, going through my portfolio and, like, all my external hard drives and being like, all right, I can use this. But, like, as I was going through all my old work, like, I just get, like, in my pit of despair of, like, man, my life's work is complete shit. What am I doing all my life? And I had to, like, practically slap myself before I was coming to the podcast because I was like, snap out of it. I can do it on a podcast.
Oh my God, that's so real, man. It's so real. Yeah. It is humbling going back and looking at your old stuff, especially when they're asking for something specific. You're like, dang, like, this is the only thing,
like, I think I had a couple things here. Yeah. It's like, maybe if I twist this way, that they'll think that it's like, yeah.
Oh man, that's a good one. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, it'll all be fine. So
yeah, absolutely. And as always, never is, like, nobody critiques your work like you do. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my gosh,
see every little flaw that you perceive as a flaw that everybody else may not be even perceive as a flaw in everything. But anyways, this has been fantastic. I think, we'll be together in the next couple weeks. I don't know if it's next week or the week after. Thank you for joining me today, Prisha.
Yeah, this was great, Tim.
And we'll see you guys next time on the Heroic Council.
Bye.
Bye-bye.